Final hour here, late night, sports radio at WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And really, we've started the discussion tonight about the Celtics is, you know, quite frankly, we've waited a long time for the Celtics to seemingly turn that corner. And that first month plus of the season was difficult and painful to watch as we were all so jacked up, so excited for the season to start. And I feel like Celtics fans were sort of shaking their heads, scratching their heads, trying to figure out what the hell was going wrong with their basketball team. And we talked about it here. There was a litany of reasons why this thing just wasn't working the way that we expected it to work. But regardless of the fact that it wasn't working, the most shocking thing that I saw through that first month plus of the season was the Celtics' lack of effort, their lack of discipline, their lack of playing like a typical Brad Stevens team typically plays. So that was the most troubling part of this. I can live with the losses. I can live with this team working their way through, reintegrating Hayward, getting him healthy, getting him right, reintegrating Kyrie Irving, and then the young guys getting used to their new roles. And in guys like Terry Rozier's case, a reduced role. You know, you would think that after the performances that he put forth throughout last year's playoffs, he'd be due for, I don't know, an increase in playing time, an increase in money, but the Celtics were asking him to take a reduced role here for the betterment of the team. So I understand how all those factors can come into play and how this thing can sort of look out of whack for a while. I get that. I've watched enough basketball to understand that. But what was troubling to me was their body language, was the fact that this team wasn't fun to watch, was the fact that it was clear that they weren't putting forth the typical effort that we have come to expect from a Brad Stevens-led team. All that seemingly has changed. The Celtics have now won 4 straight games. They're now 14-10, just 2 games out of the number 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. I believe 3 games out of the 2 seed right now. Really, with an opportunity here to continue to climb their way back into contention in the Eastern Conference and really right the ship here as the schedule has taken a turn for the easier. And that's exactly what this team needed to sort of gain some confidence for the first time this season, gain some momentum for the first time this season. But then we've had multiple reports here through the first month of the season as well that there is this potential trade out there for Anthony Davis. The first reports came at the end of November. And those reports were sort of irresponsible and partially incorrect. Because when you look at those reports, what they suggest? The initial report that came out suggested that Davis could be traded in season and the Celtics were on the short list. That is nearly impossible. We have discussed that. I think you guys all understand why that was nearly impossible. But essentially, without getting into all of the minutiae, the only way the Celtics could acquire Davis in season is to give up Kyrie Irving in the trade. Doesn't make any sense. You're trading one cornerstone piece for another cornerstone piece, but are you really getting all that much better by doing so? I don't think so. I think what interests Danny Ainge is the potential of bringing in Anthony Davis and now having 2 cornerstone pieces here, plus a guy like Gordon Hayward forming your big 3. I think that really interests a guy like Danny Ainge. And Danny Ainge generally stays after the guys that he's wanted. Right, he doesn't give up on guys that he's wanted. Hell, Danny Ainge is going to make a run at Kevin Durant this offseason. You know it and I know it. He has been a guy of Danny Ainge's going all the way back to the 2007 draft when the Celtics thought they had a chance at Kevin Durant. Danny Ainge, when he's got his mind set on a guy, he's going to do his best to put his team in a position to get that guy. So then today, you know, after those rumors went away, those stories went away, because we all sort of realized that getting Anthony Davis in season wasn't realistic. Mark Stein, a couple days ago, he goes on the Bill Simmons podcast, and Mark Stein says, no, you know, he's connected around the league. He's talked to a lot of general managers. He's talked to people within the Pelicans organization, and it's really going to boil down to, if he gets traded, it's going to boil down to the Celtics and the Lakers, and the Celtics are the front runners because A, Anthony Davis wants to either play for the Celtics or Lakers. They're both on his short list. But B, the Celtics have a hell of a lot more to offer in a potential trade for Anthony Davis. And then Mark Stein went on to say that that trade most likely won't happen until July, which is when it makes a tremendous amount of sense for the Celtics, because at that point, they will have already extended Kyrie Irving, and then you can trade other pieces not named Kyrie for Anthony Davis. but one of those pieces is going to be named Jason Tatum. And that's where it gets interesting. And there's two factors that make it interesting. The first factor is going to come up here on Monday night. We go all the way back 2 years ago to when the Gordon Hayward rumors of him signing with the Celtics were really running rampant here. The Jazz come to Boston. Celtics fans wanted Gordon Hayward. They let Hayward know that they wanted him. Gave him a great standing ovation at the start of that game. And what did that do? It pissed off Jay Crowder, alienated Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's play took a nosedive in the couple of weeks that followed that game. Remember, he couldn't hit a three for a couple of weeks. He was really in his own head following that game. He was really visibly upset, and he let us hear about it in the postgame. He felt like he deserved better from Celtics fans. I feel like a similar situation could potentially come into play here on Monday when Anthony Davis comes to town with his Pelicans. Celtics fans are going to let Anthony Davis know that they would like to see him here in a Celtics uniform next year, because these trade rumors are out there. They're now, they're real, and they want to let him know that that's a guy that I think we would be willing to trade a guy like Jason Tatum for. Hell, trade Tatum and Brown and Horford. Do whatever you got to do to get that guy here. That's my mentality. And while it's not easy to say, you know what, I'm ready to walk away from Jason Tatum, I would never walk away from a guy like Jason Tatum unless it was for a guy like Anthony Davis. There's very few guys you trade a Jason Tatum for. Anthony Davis is on the no-brainer list. Celtics fans are conflicted, and with good reason. Number one Celtics fan out there, Bill Simmons, in this podcast with Mark Stein, he was funny. He said, you know what, Anthony Davis, he feels like is the premier power forward in the NBA and maybe the best to ever play the position. And then he went on to say in his next sentence that he wouldn't trade Jason Tatum for him. So it is a real conflict for Celtics fans, because I think we all recognize the tremendous ceiling, the tremendous talent that a guy like Jason Tatum has. It is Sports Radio WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. We'll stick with the calls tonight. Let's go to Steve. Steve's in Miami. Steve, you're up next here on WEI.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Good, Steve. What's on your mind, man?
Well, before I get to Evaldi, you keep saying it would take both Tatum and Brown.
It would.
Are we sure? Really?
Yeah.
You know, you don't think that with somebody, with Horford, with Brown, and a draft pick, and maybe even the draft pick from this past year, Robert Williams? Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, that's his name. Horford is a worthless piece in the deal, and I love Al Horford. The only reason that Al Horford is thrown into the deal is to make the finances work.
The
only reason the Pelicans would want a guy like Horford is because he's going into the final year of his deal. They might even work out a potential buyout with a guy like Horford so he can go join a contender. He'll be a year older. He'll be, I think, 34 at that time. You know, it would suck for Horford to be that age going to a team that was essentially, you know, blowing it up. So it's strictly a money deal. He's not considered a real asset to a team like the Pelicans.
Okay, I'll buy that. But I still think that, you know, with Brown, with some of the draft picks, with the number one from this past year, maybe even with Terry Rozier, I think Danny Ainge is shrewd enough that he might be able to pull it off without giving up both of them. And between the two of them, I think you agree with me, I'd rather give up, I hate to say this, but I'd rather give up Brown than Tatum.
Yeah, absolutely I would, but I just don't think that's realistic when we're talking about a guy like Anthony Davis. You know, if we were talking about a secondary superstar, sure, but we're talking about Anthony Davis here. Like, he is a top three player in the league, Steve.
But here's the thing about it. Doesn't his contract end after next year, or is he signed for a couple more years?
He's got player options for a couple more years, so he can actually play with the Pelicans for another 3 years. He holds all the cards.
Right, that's what I'm. You know, that's the thing that scares me. He's got the player option, so we could be trading our future. And don't get me wrong, I would love to see Anthony Davis on the Celtics, but unless the Celtics get I'm going to re-sign with the Celtics type of deal with Davis, you could be trading a great possible future for a 1 year rental, in a sense.
Oh, listen, I agree with you 1,000% when it comes to that. So, look, if I'm the Celtics and you've got a potential deal on the table for Anthony Davis, they're going to have to ask for permission, just like they did with Kevin Garnett, to talk to Anthony Davis and make sure that he's going to sign an extension immediately here with the Celtics. So part of they would have to sign him to an extension. Otherwise, you don't give up guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, for a 1 year rental. That you can't do that.
That's what I was trying to get to. So, I mean, I might, with the possibility that he resigns, I might give up Brown and some possibilities for 1 year of Davis to try to get him into like Kyrie Irving's mindset of I'm going to re-sign with the Celtics. That I might do. But to give up both of them without a solid contract in hand, no way.
No, I'm with you there. That's where you and I absolutely agree on this.
Right. Now, Evaldi, first of all, I think it's great. I was hoping. I mean, the Red Sox are doing what a lot of teams can't do a lot of times, and that's re-signing some of their own players, like Pierce and Evaldi. Now, he got a lot of money, and basically a lot of that money comes because of his performance once he hit the Red Sox, and especially against the Yankees and in the playoffs and the World Series. But it does more than just bring a solid person back. First of all, if Kimbrel does leave down the road, if you need a reliever, this guy has a rubber arm, it seems, after two surgeries. That's a possibility. Plus, the great thing about this, and all of Red Sox Nation probably liked this part the best, it kept him away from the Yankees. And they're still looking for another starter. They'll get someone. But this guy just became beloved in Boston for what he did. I mean, I still remember when he gave up that home run in that 18-inning game, the Red Sox players, as you probably remember, as they were going into the tunnel, they were all patting him on the back and all that. I mean, that was just great. And for David Price to come out and say, I'm thrilled that he's back, you know, because so much negativity in the past has been about with Price, you know, that's a nice, solid thing to say. So I am thrilled. Is he worth what we'll find out. But he's the youngest starting pitcher on the market. He established himself in Boston. And because of his arm, he can be so many things. So if Kimbrel doesn't come back, maybe he's the starter next year, and then maybe the following year he becomes the reliever. You have so many possibilities, and he's shown that he can handle it. And not just one, but two surgeries has made him into a bionic arm.
You're right, Stephen. That's the interesting part of this thing. He's already been through the ringer here with the two injuries. And listen, I appreciate the phone call. And we'll talk about this on the other side, but I really did like this deal. I felt like the Red Sox had to pull the trigger on this deal. I knew they were probably going to have to overpay for him a little bit. But look, Nathan Evaldi, to me, the most significant thing that he did throughout this postseason run was, I know that he doesn't have the talent level or maybe the upside of guys like Chris Sale and David Price when you compare all three at their best. I get that. But when you look at guys like Chris Sale and David Price, A, they're on the wrong side of 30, and B, you know, Chris Sale is yet to prove that he could be a trusted starter here or even a starter that can be healthy in the postseason, let alone somebody that you can rely on as the ace of your staff, the workhorse of your staff throughout a postseason run. And I'm not convinced that David Price is going to be able to repeat his performance for a second consecutive year throughout the postseason. I really don't. I mean, it took him 10 years to do what he did this postseason. Meanwhile, Evaldi, you know, he's a midseason acquisition. He comes to Boston. The Red Sox desperately needed him to be this versatile, dynamic, and dominant player that he became throughout this postseason run. And not only did he do it, he thrived in that role in this environment, in this city, on the world's biggest stage in the postseason, in the World Series. So to me, the fact that he showed that he's got the stones to be able to play in that environment, that makes him worth the money. You know, if you're going to pay other guys $25, $30 million a year without knowing that they can play in this environment and thrive in this environment in the postseason, yet you got a guy that proved it, you got to pay the guy that proved it. I know we're running late, but I'm going to take another call here. Let's go to Jay. Jay's in Jamaica Plain. Jay, you're up next here on WEI.
How you doing, Patrick?
Hey, Jay, what's on your mind, man?
I was watching the Toronto Raptors Philadelphia 76ers game yesterday and seeing how really the Raptors have turned around with the addition of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. And they're a real force in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, they have the best record in the NBA right now. I mean, of course, you know, talking about the potential Anthony Davis trade is interesting, of course, but it's not going to happen at least until after the season. And you have to think about what's in front of you. And I mean, obviously the Celtics team was touted to be this, you know, they were the team that's supposed to go to the Eastern Conference Finals and win it and, you know, give Golden State for their money. But right now, this Kawhi Leonard-led Raptors team is really posing to be the obstacle for the Celtics to go through. I mean, they had that game against them here at the Garden, which they won. But I mean, I feel like they're the real thing.
Well, they are.
Their defense locks down. Siakam is, undoubtedly the most improved player in the league coming in. I mean, they got those three forwards and Danny Green and Kyle Lowry on the backcourt. I mean, they're quite unstoppable right now. And I'm just trying to think down the road, if the Celtics kind of had this, you know, position going into the playoffs and they don't actually get home court advantage like they did last year. That was part of their real blessing in disguise, was that they always got to go, you know, get the game seven at home. And if that doesn't happen this year, I just don't know if that's actually in their laurels for them to actually get out of the Eastern Conference.
Here's the thing. It's hard to judge. And you bring up great points about the Raptors. And even a team like the Sixers, you know, they're 17-9, and they added a stud in Jimmy Butler. I don't think that they're as good as the Celtics. I really don't. But I look at the Raptors, and I think the Raptors right now, at least, are a better team than the Celtics. The thing here is the Celtics, I believe, have got more of an upside than the Raptors do. The Raptors all-star or elite-level players are playing at a higher level more consistently than the Celtics are right now. However, it's hard to tell what a guy like Gordon Hayward's going to be in February or March. So while you've got, you know, Kawhi Leonard healthy, playing at an MVP level right now, he's also a guy that quit on his team last year. He's also a guy that battled injuries last year. I don't know what he's going to be in February or March, but let's assume that he is the player that he is right now. You know, with the Celtics.
But it's also his contract year, so he has to play. Right?
He has to play, you know, barring injury. But that's the other part of this. Is like, what if things get difficult for Toronto? Let's say they've got a tough 10-game stretch. All of his teammates know that he's not sticking around. He knows he's not sticking around. So the perfect storm has happened for the Raptors so far this year. They got off to a hot start. They've played great together, and he's played at an MVP level, right? But I would love to see what happens to the Raptors if and when they hit a tough stretch. It's hard to build your team around a guy like Kawhi Leonard that's let it be known that he's probably not sticking around for the long term. Whereas at least with the Celtics, I feel like, you know, we haven't seen the best of this team yet. We've seen the best of the Raptors, and the Celtics, believe it or not, when they were playing not at their best, they beat the Raptors. We've seen the Raptors play at their best for an extended period of time this year, and I don't think we've seen the Celtics at their best yet this season.
I will give you that. I mean, I too believe that the Celtics have a better team cohesion from last year going forward, and obviously with Gordon Hayward, you know, his improvement, he's going to keep improving, obviously, and he's going to get back into that starting five. But yet at the same time, the efficient playing and the defensive efficiency and their scoring when Kawhi is on, he's undoubtedly top three players in the entire league.
Right now, he's the leading candidate for MVP. But if I want to give you, before you get out of here, I want to give you one thing to sort of grab onto and hold onto as a positive sort of statistic to pay attention to when it comes to these two teams. Right now, the Celtics' defensive rating, as far as opponents' points per game goes, they're giving up 102 points per game, which is best in the NBA. And as well as the Raptors have played, and as locked in as Kawhi's been defensively, that team is giving up 108 points per game. They're scoring 116 points a game. That's the issue. But they're giving up 108 points per game. That's a huge number to be giving up if you're really going to contend for a championship. So right now, despite all the Celtics' problems, despite all their inconsistencies, giving up 102 points per game, that makes them the best defensive team as far as opponent scoring in the NBA right now.
Fair enough.
All right.
Thank you, Patrick.
I appreciate
the
phone call. Jay, anytime, man. I love talking about the Celtics with you guys. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we continue, we will get into this Nathan Eovaldi thing. As the Red Sox, I feel like they went out on a limb. They overextended themselves a little bit here, but with good reason, for the right guy. But I also think it spells the imminent end of the Chris Sale era. I feel like this is his last season in Boston. I feel like the Red Sox, they made their decision. They made their choice. They spent their money. They went with the youth rather than go with the guy who's dominant for half a season and not so much the other half of the season. Did they make the right decision choosing Nathan Eovaldi, I think, over extending Chris Sale. We'll talk about that and more when we come back right here on Sports Radio WEI. It is late night right here, Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. Finally, there is some open phone lines for you guys at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And we will get into Nathan Evalde and the deal that he signed with the Red Sox. Bravo to the Red Sox. Bravo to Evalde. I love this story. I love this kid. I love what he's been able to overcome, not one but two Tommy Johns, and having the stones to come into Boston, play in this environment, and thrive in this environment. I mean, we can, you know, write down this laundry list of players, these highly paid players, all-star level players that the Red Sox have committed themselves to over, let's say, the last 20 years, right? Edgar Renteria, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And what happens with these guys? They come to Boston and they become a shell of themselves. They just can't perform in this environment. It took David Price multiple years here, and yeah, he had a great year this postseason, but ultimately, who's confident that David Price is going to repeat this performance that he had this postseason next year after 10 years of failed postseason attempts? I have zero faith. Now, if he does it 2 years in a row, I'll shut the hell up. But I'm just not there yet with David Price. The bad outweighs the good. You know, but go back over time here. It's not, you know, this fictional thing that we bring up. This really is a difficult environment for guys to come in and thrive in because of idiots like me. You know, we come on the radio, and there's plenty of idiots in print, idiots online, idiots on the radio, and idiots on TV. And if you come to this town, you better be prepared to either, you know, be able to perform here or deal with the BS that comes with failing in Boston. And some guys just aren't wired that way. So I do want to get into this Nathan Evalde conversation, but real quick, I got a good chuckle in the break as I'm going through my Twitter timeline here, and I'm watching stuff. I'm watching NBA stuff on the TVs here on the monitors. So look, the Lakers, they've played better this year than I think a lot of people expected them to play thus far this season, right? So when you look at the Lakers and you look at what they've accomplished with LeBron James, they're 15-9, sitting in the fifth seed right now in the Western Conference. They've been able to pull this thing together a little bit faster than other than I thought they would, and other NBA pundits thought they would. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. I mean, when you look at what they've done with LeBron James, I give them a tremendous amount of credit. And then when you compare and contrast that to a team like the Houston Rockets, that, you know, if we think we've got it difficult here in Boston with the start that the Celtics got off to, right? We thought the Celtics got off to this difficult start at 10-10, now 14-10, seemingly righting the ship. Imagine being a Rockets fan. The Rockets were one of the teams that were expected to compete for a championship as well. They were one of the teams that was expected to put a scare into a team like Golden State as well. And as of right now, the Rockets are, 11-13 on the season. And when you look at this team right now at 11-13, they're sitting outside of the playoffs. And it's going to take a lot for them to work their way back into the playoffs because the Western Conference is so dominant this year. They're so talented and so good. But where I got my chuckle was this. Back a few weeks ago, the Rockets, they blamed all their problems on Carmelo Anthony, who they brought in for minimal dollars here after he was traded to the Hawks, and the Hawks essentially bought him out. He went to the Rockets, and, you know, nobody expected Carmelo to be the Carmelo he was in his prime, but, you know, Carmelo went to the Rockets, and he actually played pretty well. He wasn't a problem. I think he had a 28-point game. He had a game winner. I mean, he played pretty well the first couple weeks of the season, but he was an easy target as the Rockets' chemistry seemed way off. So the Rockets haven't released him officially, but they kicked him off the team, essentially, a few weeks back. And they said, you know what, go home. We'll figure something out, but we don't want you here with us. They continue to pay him, but he's not a free agent. And look, he's in, like, NBA limbo right now. Come December 15th, that's when he's eligible to be traded. So in the last 24, 48 hours, LeBron James is back to doing LeBron James things. He may be with the Lakers. The Lakers may be succeeding with him, and he may have bosses like Magic Johnson and Jeannie Buss, but that's not going to stop LeBron from playing general manager, and I love it. So LeBron James is coming out publicly and saying, you know what? It's time to bring my buddy Carmelo to L.A., and that is exactly what the Lakers need to implode. I love it. I want to see it happen. LeBron, the general manager, do your general manager thing. You know, you didn't do enough damage to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You look at the dumpster fire that you left there in Cleveland. You want to play general manager in L.A. now, too? I hope they listen to you. I hope Magic listens to you. I hope Jeannie Buss listens to you. Bring your over-the-hill friend. Bring him to L.A. and watch your season implode, and we'll laugh all the way. It is sports radio. WEI, I had to get that out there because I just can't get enough of LeBron James, the general manager. That dude is never going to learn his lesson. He is the most dynamic player in the NBA, and it kills me to say that. All right? Right now, in year 16, 34 years old, he's as dominant as he's ever been. He has single-handedly elevated the Lakers to 15-9 this year. Give him all the credit in the world as a basketball player. Man, he is a terrible, terrible, terrible general manager. Yet these other teams, these team leaders, team presidents, team general managers, they continue to allow LeBron James to play amateur GM. And I pray that Magic and the Lakers allow LeBron to bring in Carmelo Anthony next week. But it is sports radio. WEI talking about Nathan Eovaldé, talking about, you know, the value that I think he brings to the Red Sox. Yes, did the Red Sox overpay for him a little bit? Sure. But he earned every penny of that contract. 4 years, $67.5 million. Is it a steep price to pay? Yep. But am I comfortable with a guy like Nathan Eovaldé in the postseason? More comfortable than I am with a guy like, I don't know, Price, Sale? Yeah, I am. And that's shocking to say because those two guys are considered two of the best at their positions in Major League Baseball. But Nathan Eovaldé, he showed me something, and he was going to get paid. This was the perfect storm for him. It's a very weak class for pitchers out there right now. And he was a guy, he was young enough, and he had the postseason resume, had the World Series, he was going to get paid. And I felt like if he left the Red Sox, it was going to leave a large gaping hole because of his versatility and all the things that he can do. You know, we look at him as a potential starting pitcher, but if the Red Sox need him to do other things, he's proven that he can do multiple things and he's willing to do multiple things, the ultimate teammate for this Boston Red Sox team that's going to be looking to repeat as World Series champions next year. But it is sports radio. WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. Back out to the phones we'll go. Let's go to Megan. Megan's up next here on WEI.
Hello.
Hello, Megan. What's on your mind?
I love the Eovaldé deal, and I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on Chris Sale being a closer.
On Chris Sale being a closer? I would love it, but I don't think that he's ready to go down that road yet. He's going into what's essentially his free agent year. So the way that he's going to maximize the last big contract that he's going to make, I think, is showing that he can still be a dominant starter. Now, if he shows this year, let's say he comes back and he runs into the same shoulder problems that he had last year once again, and the only way for him to be an effective pitcher is to minimize the impact on that shoulder by limiting him to essentially three innings a night, maybe that's something that's in the cards later on down the line. But at this stage in his career, I don't think he's ready to give up on being a starting pitcher just yet.
Okay.
All right. What do you want? What, Megan? Do you want him to be the closer here?
I just thought it was interesting, and you know, him closing the World Series, and I thought it was great when Eckersley became a closer. So,
I agree with you. It was an awesome moment, Megan. And listen, I appreciate the phone call. It was a great moment, but I think that moment goes back to it defines who Alex Cora is as a manager and why he has worked so well here in Boston and why he was able to change sort of the tone and tenor of this team. This team went from unlikable and unwatchable under John Farrell to a beloved team under Cora with virtually the same group of guys, because Cora found this magic. He found this way to get this team to play for one another. And this whole, you know, roving starter thing that happened in the playoffs, getting starters to be closers and set up men to be closers and starters. I mean, everybody was willing to do anything to help this team. That's a very rare thing in Major League Baseball. And it's not a coincidence that it really got started the year before with the Astros with Alex Cora there. You know, he took that philosophy to Boston and look what happened. But that was sort of almost a favor that he did to Chris Sale. He wanted to put Chris Sale out there and give him that moment, put Chris Sale on the mound when they won the World Series. So Chris Sale goes into the offseason feeling really good about himself, because that's very important to this team accomplishing what they want to accomplish again next year, and that's ultimately getting back to the World Series. It's a much easier task if you've got Chris Sale physically and mentally right going into the 2019 baseball season. It is sports radio. WEI, it is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll wrap this thing up at 617-779-7937. Final segment here, late night sports radio. WEI, it's Patrick Gilroy with you guys. And Look, it's been another fun show here tonight. This whole Celtics conversation really took off, and I did enjoy, although it was brief, this Nathan Eovaldi stuff going into Chris Sale and this Red Sox team. It's going to be fascinating how this team comes together again next year, and if they're able to recapture and rekindle the sort of electricity and dynamic that they had last year, next year. And what was funny, we talked about this last night, my frustration with the conversation surrounding this team going to the White House. No problem with them going to the White House. That's a team decision. If they want to go, fine. They can go. That's not for me to decide. My frustration is the moment that they won the World Series, I was on TV with Steve Burton that night doing 3 hours of TV. Then I came here and did 6 hours of overnight radio from 2 to 6, or 4 hours from 2 to 6. So that was like 7 consecutive hours of, you know, media following the World Series victory. And within a half an hour of this team winning the World Series, the question was already asked if they were going to go to the White House. And it's really been a discussion for the better part of the last month. So here we are, just 1 month removed, a month plus removed from this team winning the World Series. And instead of Red Sox fans still basking in the glow of that, or looking forward to pitchers and catchers, which, believe it or not, they're going to report in about 2 months, which is going to go by in a blink. You know it and I know it. We got wrapped up in talking about politics and the Red Sox, and I hate that because this team deserved better than that. This team deserves to be talked about throughout the postseason, throughout the offseason. And how are they going to recapture the magic that they had last year, next year? And I feel like guys like Chris Sale and Nathan Eovaldi are going to go a long way towards recapturing what they had last year and putting themselves in a potential position to at least give themselves a chance to repeat next year. So that's what we're talking about here, and we'll talk about this again tomorrow night as well, as I'll be here from 10 to midnight tomorrow night. It's a conversation worthy of more than a couple of segments, and it's one that I want to dedicate some time to. Celtics will have an off day tomorrow, and I think we'll really dive into not only the Eovaldi signing, but what's the likelihood that Chris Sale is going to come back healthy next year? What's the likelihood that a guy like David Price will recapture and be able to achieve what he achieved in the postseason last year and do it again next year? So I'm looking forward to that discussion. Until then, we certainly can take more of your phone calls as we get ready to wrap things up here on Late Night. Let's get back out to the phones right now. Let's go to Tom. Tom's in the car. Tom, you're up next here on Sports Radio WEEI.
Mr. Gilroy, how are you?
Mr. Tom, I am living the dream. How are you?
I'm living my wife's dream, I'll tell you that.
I don't know. You're up at 2 o'clock in the morning calling a radio station. So, you know, what is she dreaming about?
No, this is when I drive home from work, bro.
I got you, man. I got you.
Are you saying that Cora brought over this whole starting people out of the bullpen, putting starters in the bullpen thing?
I'm saying that it's something that hasn't really been done all that often in Major League Baseball.
Whoa. Randy Johnson, Pedro
Martinez.
Hold
on. You're going way back, and we can pick and choose.
Everybody's done it. Curt Schilling. Everyone's come out of the bullpen.
Not the way the Red Sox did it.
Madison Bumgarner.
Not the way the Red Sox did it.
Started, closed, relieved, everything.
The Red Sox did it with multiple guys through each and every round of the playoffs. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a one-off like Pedro was. It wasn't a guy coming in to sort of give a heroic effort to get a much-needed win. This was part of their philosophy from game one of the postseason all the way through winning the World Series. So that's for sure what was different about it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, okay, I need you to come in and help the team right now in a one-off situation. This was clearly a meeting that he had with his players and a complete change in philosophy from what they did throughout the regular season, because you can't sustain this for much longer than a playoff run.
You don't do it during the regular season, but I've seen plenty of teams bring in starters out of the bullpen during the postseason.
But have you seen teams do it with this many starters and do it this consistently from game one of the postseason?
It's definitely more popular now than ever.
Absolutely it is. And you know what? I feel like Cora felt more comfortable doing it here because he saw how well it worked the previous year with the Astros. That's right. All.
Yeah, I feel like Bumgarner kind of like, he was the guy. Didn't he pitch all of a whole World Series?
He did. Yep. He was all over the place. He was unbelievable. And he really set the tone for what the Red Sox did last year. You know what I mean? Like,
no
if
doubt.
Bumgarner hadn't done what he had done in the previous year, I'm not sure the Red Sox actually do what they did last year. And when you think about the guys that they did it with, too, I mean, you look at a guy like David Price, he's considered to be kind of a jerk. A guy like, you know what I mean? But they were all willing to sacrifice themselves for the betterment of the team.
Yeah, Price's first good experience in the postseason was out of the bullpen, so.
Yeah, you're right about that, definitely, so why not do it again? You got anything else there, Tom?
So what is your Chris Sale confidence meter right now? How do you feel?
I'm at about a 6. You?
Not bad. No, you know me. I'm always riding a 10, bro.
He's a positive guy, Tom. Let's pick this conversation up again tomorrow night. We'll talk more about Chris Sale, talk more about your confidence meter. I want to know how you ride that 10 day in and day out, man. Whatever medication you're on, you need to share it with me. It is Sports Radio, WEI. This is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Thank you to everybody that participated tonight. The Celtics, they come out big winners tonight, 128-100. Over the Knicks, that's 4 consecutive games that they've won, 4 consecutive games where they've scored more than 115 points. Last time the Celtics did that, number 33, Larry Bird, was still putting up jumpers for your Boston Celtics. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This has been Late Night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night at 10. Until then, bye-bye.